Hey, glad you can make it. And welcome to the Employee Cycle Podcast, where we talk to HR innovators, thought leaders, and even some disruptors about the latest in HR trends, HR tech, and you guessed it, HR data. Well, you've heard enough of me talking. Now let's start the show. Show. Before we begin, let's hear a quick message from our sponsor.
Hello, HR. It's me, your HR data. And I need to apologize. I'm sorry for being all over the place. I'm sorry for being difficult. I'm sorry for not being there for you. But it's not my fault. You put me in different HR systems and messy spreadsheets. But guess what? I now have a new friend, and their name is Employee Cycle. They can put all of me in one HR dashboard for you and keep me updated and simple so we'll better understand each other. Look, we're smarter when we're working together, so if you want me to show you my full potential, please go to employeecycle.com to get your free demo today. That's employeecycle.com. Promise me you'll go. Our relationship depends on it.
Hey, hey, welcome back to the Employee Cycle Podcast. I'm Bruce Marable, your host for today. So today's special guest is the Director of Sales and Marketing at AccuTrace, a background screening, drug testing, and credentialing company. We're going to talk about the truth around background screening, drug testing, and checking credentials. Let's welcome Robert Flom to the podcast. Woo!
Hey, Bruce, how's it going?
Going great. Rob, thanks so much for joining us on the podcast. Really appreciate you coming.
Oh, it's a total pleasure. I'm really happy to see what I can do to serve you and your audience.
Great, great. Well, we have a loyal audience and it's growing every day. So can't wait for you to drop gems around this interesting topic that we haven't covered yet. The first thing that we want to ask is, how did you end up at AccuTrace and working around background screens, drug testing, and credentialing? Because I'm sure that's not something that someone goes to school for and says, you know what, that's what I want to do. I want to make sure that companies are screening every single employee the right way.
Yeah, I majored in credentialing and background screening. No, I'm just kidding. Well, actually, it's a little bit of a crazy story. And, you know, like I'm sure a lot of people in HR, they started in different places. And so I was, after college, I was working in an insurance law firm and I was going to law school. So I thought that's what I wanted to do in the direction I was going. But, you know, after a year, I didn't see that as the place I wanted to be. So I was actually recruited into recruiting. Working with a small firm at the time in South Jersey called Source for Teachers, where we hired and placed substitute teachers in different places. And I was working there for a long time. And, you know, I learned the ropes, you know, credentialing, background screening there, you know, because working in schools is very background and compliance heavy. And from there, I actually wanted to move into, you know, actually partnering with schools and different companies so I could help serve them directly versus finding the people and credentialing and sourcing those folks. And then I moved into a company by the name of Delta T Group, which is in outside of Philly, right in Bryn Mawr, PA. And I was doing the partnership side of things, you know, still the same kind of service, just working directly with the schools and seeing how I could serve them. And then I was actually tapped and, you know, during that time, still working in sales and getting my marketing chops up. So then I was actually, found a great opportunity with AccuTrace. And I've actually known the owner here. He owns a couple companies, including Delta T Group. And he thought I might be able to help serve him and his clients. So I'm happy to be here and I'm still learning myself every single day. Yeah.
Great. Well, thanks for that background. And so now we're going to get right into it. We want to talk about the truth around these things, background screening, drug testing, and credentialing. But before we even talk about the truth about them, can you talk about the difference between them and define what all three of these things are?
Yeah, totally. So background screening, when people really think about that, that is really looking for validation on what might be reported. So if someone's going to be completing an application, submitting their resume, they want to make sure that the background and your history is up to par. You know, are the employers and the dates and the positions you've held on your resume, are they valid? So we would do, you know, employment verification, professional references there. And if you're on your application, you check, you know, I have never been convicted of a crime or a felony or anything like that. Employers, again, just are looking for validation to ensure that the information you're presenting is correct. So they're going to do a background criminal history background check to make sure that, you know, everything that you're presenting is who you are and that they're able to move forward as such and know that you're reputable. So that's more of the background screening. Credentialing kind of falls into place when you're going to be working in a professional setting. So you're a registered nurse, an LPN, a doctor, or even a teacher. And you have those professional licenses that we need to verify and make sure you have your credentials up to date. So that could be licensure verification, educational verification, and then also even making sure that you're still able to practice. You know, there isn't any suspensions on your license. You're able to practice. You're able to participate in Medicare and Medicaid. You haven't been convicted of any abuse of your license. So when it comes down to the credentialing aspect, that's kind of where people's minds focus. And then last but not least, the background screening and the drug testing. Drug testing is really going to be, you know, not always a requirement for different positions, but if you're going to be operating heavy machinery, if you're going to be a forklift operator, or if you're going to be working in a medical setting and you're going to have access to prescription drugs, it's always best practice to make sure that you're checking your candidates upon being hired. You might want to do random drug testing, and you can also do that for suspension or if you're going to promote them. These are all reasons where you would be able to reinstate that drug testing and make sure, you know, everyone's behaving appropriately.
You said so many things within that I need to pick some of that apart. So, So the first question is, when is this necessary? And what I mean by that, is it only necessary for specific industries, specific company sizes? Is it only necessary for companies in specific locations? Why would I go, let's just call it, out of my way to make the hiring process more burdensome for myself as the HR person, make it longer, make it even more expensive to even have this a part of the process?
No, I mean, that's a great question, really. Why would you want to go through this? And is it only for large companies, or does anyone and everyone really want to consider making background checks? I'd say it really comes down to the level of confidence you want to have in the people that you hire. And so what does that mean? If you're hiring someone to work internally at your company, it would likely be a relief as a hiring manager, right? And even from a compliance standpoint, you want to make sure that you're covering your bases, because you want to know you're not working alongside someone who might be a sex offender or a convicted felon. And if you want to have, you know, a level of confidence knowing, all right, well, they gave me their application, the resume, they didn't say there's anything I need to check on, you know, I feel like I can believe them. Or do you want to have the level of confidence where you've done your independent research and due diligence, you've checked your references, as, you know, most hiring managers would do, and you can know wholeheartedly that you've done a level of, you know, research and due diligence on your part. Just like you wouldn't want to have to bring these people into your home and live with you if there's a chance they might be a convicted felon, your workplace is really just an extension of that.
So let's talk about cost. As an HR professional, I'm sure a lot of the listeners are thinking, I am always fighting for dollars. Unfortunately, mm-hmm. a lot of CEOs and, you know, leaders of companies look at HR as a cost center versus a success center. And so for them, this HR person is thinking, there's always a trade-off. And maybe there's something else I want to do, but instead now I'm adding to my hiring process. Should I ever think about this as being too expensive?
Well, I think another way that you can shift your perspective is, you know, you are really mitigating cost and risk, because if you don't do these background checks, that's going to open you up to more risk. If, let's say you're working in a place that provides staff to other facilities, if you're in the staffing realm, and you don't do your due diligence and check these background screenings, and then something happens at one of those workplaces that you've hired this person for, or even if you're centralized and you're hiring for various offices within your own company, and something actually takes place, you know, that's going to open you up to more money lost. It's going to open you up to lawsuits. You're going to have to, you know, pay out because you didn't stay within compliance, depending upon what those requirements are by state or by industry. So it's really about, you know, you're investing. You're not really spending money. It's not a cost. You're investing in your compliance, your security, and that of, you know, your employees and maybe the people that your employees service as well. So it's really about making sure that you're coming from a safe and secure place. And it's less about thinking, oh, this is just another cost that, you know, we're going to be losing on. You're really going to be saving over the long run.
Got it. And then what about the length of these different things, these different checks and credentialing and background screening and drug testing? If I'm the super overworked HR person, or the recruiter for that matter, that is looking to get somebody in this backfill position that's been open for 6 months, and now I need to add this process in, or maybe I think that I'm going to lose a candidate and I need to make a decision today, but now I'm adding in this additional step in the process. What do I do? How should I reconcile with that?
So, I mean, that's a valid point. And I think, you know, when we're talking to companies around background screening and credentialing, some of their biggest concerns are, like you said, turnaround time. You know, I need to get someone in the door and started. And if they have to go through these additional steps, whether externally on their part, if they have to go get a drug test, or if I have to do something internally, you know, I don't need more work on my plate, right? So that makes total sense. It's the work and also the time. Now, from the additional work perspective, and, you know, actually getting these background screenings done, oftentimes, I'd say 90% of the time, a company like Accutrace or similar can actually integrate with your HRIS system or your applicant tracking system. So what that means is when an applicant comes to your website and they submit an application, we can actually have it's as an option to trigger these checks automatically. And so you actually, as the hiring manager or the HR director, you don't have to go through these additional steps and get these people, you know, signed up to a website. You don't have to email them out a form. You don't have to fax anything. Everything is automated, sent to their email, and they can actually go on to an online portal on the candidate side and complete these criminal background checks and these credentialings, which, you know, does a few things. One, it takes work off your plate as the hiring manager. And two, it increases the candidate experience for your applicants, because they don't want to have to talk to you and send you forms and you know, read their information and social security number to you over the phone. That's going to, you know, create friction in the application process. And obviously the goal is to make that as frictionless as possible. So we do everything we can to kind of make it an easy process for both the hiring manager and the applicant. But that doesn't necessarily take care of the turnaround time issue, you know, and how long it might take to actually get some of these things processed. And I say for a majority of services, you know, like criminal background checks and verification of employment, these things are super quick, super quick. So if you knew somebody was going to be a good fit, and you were ready to give them an offer of employment contingent upon successful background screening and credentialing, we could actually automate a lot of this for you, get it done in about 2 days. The only thing that would usually take longer than 1 or 2 days are, you know, FBI fingerprinting and drug testing for the most part. There's some variables there, but then you would just need to think about, you know, again, what is the level of confidence I want in the people I'm bringing in? Is it worth it for me? You know, if they're going to be operating forklifts, the answer is most likely yes, it's worth it for me to make sure that they have a clean or a negative drug test. And once I know that, that's when I feel comfortable and confident enough to offer this person employment. So, you know, totally valid concerns, but we certainly do what we can to make that mitigated as and minimize that as much as possible.
Got it. So before I co-founded Employee Cycle with my partner, my previous startup was an applicant tracking system. And background screening companies like yours were always approaching us to say that they could integrate with our system. But one of the things that was interesting from the customer perspective and the HR perspective is to who wanted the background screen or credentialing or drug testing before the offer letter or after the offer letter. So can you give some context into when you think every candidate should be screened so that you're not wasting the time of the candidate or the employer versus only doing the screening once candidates get to a certain step? Because I think when we were working with banks, they had a pretty rigorous screening process where I think they screened everyone up front before they even got to a certain step in the application process. So could you give some context around that?
Definitely. So I think it's depending upon how much time the HR department might have and how much cost they're willing to put out, right? So with a financial institution, let's say, the example you just gave, there's the whole process, and we can look at the process in different chunks. Like there's the application, there's this phone screen, there's the interview, you know, you're shortlisted, and then we want to give you an offer of employment. For a financial institution, they might be able to only have enough, they might have more money and less time. So they might spend the money to screen everyone up front and only spend their time on those applicants who pass, right? And they're probably only going to be giving, you know, screenings to folks that they might be somewhat interested in. So they're going to be spending more money up front, screening more people, but then spending less time on the back end actually interviewing those folks that passed. Whereas other organizations that might have, you know, more time but less money available to do this kind of service, they might actually screen everyone first, or they might actually interview everyone first, excuse me. So they'll have everyone apply, they'll give a phone screen, they'll have everybody come in, they'll meet with the managers, they'll be shortlisted, and then they've spent all that time up front versus the money, but now they have a shortlist of 5 people. They're going to be spending less money on those credentials and the background screening, and then maybe only giving the offer to those folks that pass that. So I think it's really about, you know, your organization, the resources you have, where you want to spend those resources. Do you want to spend more resources on your time or more resources on the screening up front, and really balancing that for your own organization?
Got it. Do you ever think that these types of screenings or testings are inaccurate or maybe even sometimes biased towards a certain group of people?
I think that there are instances when they could be providing information that isn't 100% correct and can lead to unfair hiring practices. And I think there's also, you know, legal safeguards that have been put in place to, you know, minimize that as much as possible. A couple examples that are just coming to mind are, you know, when people are having their background screens checked, if you have a super common name, a name that, you know, like Joe Smith, a million people have that name. If you're not working with a credentialing and background screening company that has a really rigorous quality assurance program goes through all of the results, makes sure that all the social security numbers line up, and have actually live people sift through this information, then there's chances that your hiring manager is going to be getting someone else's criminal background check. It hasn't happened with Accutrace, but I've read articles where, you know, people bring lawsuits against your employer because a criminal record from a candidate that isn't you was wrongfully delivered to your hiring manager, and the offer letter decision was made upon that information. So, you know, that's one thing that comes to mind. And the next thing that comes to mind is, you know, the Fair Credit and Reporting Act, where people and employers have done background screenings and credentialings on applicants and made hiring decisions based upon credit records, you know, whether they're paying their bills. And in a lot of places, that's actually been deemed illegal, and you can't make hiring decisions upon that information. But nonetheless, people are receiving this information. And so, you know, you really need to be mindful as a hiring manager about, you know, what kind of quality assurance program is there to make sure that, you know, you're getting appropriate information and that you're using that information for hiring practices legally. So I think, you know, there are situations that can bring gray areas for folks.
So speaking of what's legal versus illegal in gray areas in regards to background screening, where does social media fall? If an employer thinks that this candidate is awesome, they're ready to make a move, they can't wait to get them in the office, get them started working, but they say, you know what, this person is fresh out of school, or they said some things in the interview that made me question, let's just say, their ethics or behavior, and nothing really hardcore or solid, but I start poking around as an HR person and looking at their social media channel. I'm looking at their Snapchat, Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, whatever it is, and then I find something that I don't necessarily like. I mean, one, is that even fair? Because everything is subjective. I'm sure if, let's just say, there's a 22-year-old hiring manager that's hiring a person that, I don't know, that might be 21, or a 25-year-old hiring manager or recruiter that's hiring someone 21, that might be a different situation. If there's a 50 or 60-year-old hiring a person who's 21 because of generation gap and just what they believe is acceptable. So, one, I guess personally, how do you feel about that? And two, with your company and background screens, does your background screen include social media as well?
Yeah, and I mean, this is a hot topic that a lot of employers have been bringing up lately. So if I'm talking to someone and I'm trying to, you know, share our services with them, I'll get that question a lot. You know, do you guys check social media? And that is something that Accutrace does. And we can certainly incorporate that as a service included in any kind of package. But how I feel about it personally, you know, I think that people and candidates need to be mindful, right? Because you can't delete the internet for the most part. Once it's out there, it's out there. And I think that it takes a level and shows a level of maturity from a candidate. If I'm a hiring manager and I'm looking at their Twitter and their Facebook, and if I'm seeing, you know, pictures of them at, you know, parties, that's going to make me feel one thing. And I'm allowed to do that. It isn't illegal, at least at this point, for hiring managers to look at social media. But on the other hand, if you go to their Twitter and they're sharing content around their industry, or if they're on Facebook and they're tagging themselves at an industry event, you know, that's going to make you feel a completely different way. And I think that candidates should have that kind of perspective when thinking about their social media. But, you know, while the Equal Opportunity Commission isn't a big fan of employers making hiring decisions on the basis of social media profiles, that doesn't mean that they can't do that. Employers also can't discriminate against a candidate based on that information. They can't discriminate on age, sex, their race and religion. They can't do any of that. So if that's the information that you're perceiving as a hiring manager, and you think maybe consciously or subconsciously that's affecting your decision, you really need to be conscious of that, because that is in fact illegal. You know, instead, usually I think it's really, like I said before, it's really about making sure there aren't any inappropriate photos, any profane comments, or anything else that might indicate a person who is going to be a risk to their company reputation. It's, you know, what is your personal reputation? What does that make me think you're going to do for our company reputation? I think candidates should really be mindful of that.
So let's dig into that. Mindful of your company's reputation. First of all, when you're screening for social media, is this someone just literally scrolling through pictures? Do you have some type of algorithm for what's appropriate or inappropriate? How do you determine that?
Well, I think that it's really going to be based upon the employer's preference, right? And the same thing is with a lot of our services. So if somebody wants a criminal background check, there isn't one criminal background check we want to, you know, force everyone into. There's a combination of background checks that you need to consider to really paint the entire picture. Same thing is true with an employee or a professional reference. You know, what are the specific questions you want to ask that previous employer to understand that candidate's standing in that organization? So there isn't one set way to go about it. But it really is going to be a conversation. You know, what would you feel inappropriate with? Would it be for you don't want to see inappropriate photos? Are you looking for profane language? You know, what kind of specific things would be considered triggers to you? And sometimes that is, you know, profane language. If there's any, you know, profanity on their Facebook or Twitter, we're not uncomfortable with that, and we will take that into consideration of their background screening. And it's also not going to be one of these things where it's like, oh, we found something, and so that entire candidate is off the table. It's really creating a whole picture and considering that all the information at once. Just like if you do a criminal background check, that doesn't bar you from employment if something returns and there is a criminal record. You weigh it. How long ago was it? What was the charge? So it's really about, you know, just having a full understanding of a candidate.
This is really interesting. I have another question about social media. So is it your company's responsibility to stay on top of all of the new social media platforms? Do you have to wait to a certain platform gets to a certain level of popularity or gets a certain amount of traction? So, for instance, and I don't know if you can share this, but are you tracking people on Snapchat right now?
No, Snapchat is not something that we're currently tracking. And you also need to think about the way people can actually engage and view content on these platforms, right? Because let's just take a look at Twitter. For a vast majority of users, that content is public. If you know that person's Twitter handle, you can go onto their profile and take a look at their profile. You can see what their tweets are, right? But sometimes folks have privacy settings where it says, you know, this user's tweets are protected. And so even if you're a background screening company and you go onto that profile, 90% of the time you're going to see that content, you'll be able to look at that, but there's going to be a percentage of the time where it's just not available. Whereas Snapchat, you need to actually accept a user to follow, or that might be another setting. And where Facebook, you can usually, again, go on their profile page and really see everything, unless they have, you know, limited access to people who aren't their friends. So I think by and large, we see Facebook is the big consideration. Than Twitter. And I haven't really seen much in the way of, you know, Snapchat or Instagram or anything like that.
Interesting. So if a company decided not to hire someone based off of this, based off of something that they found on someone's social platform, is that legal? And And outside of that, do you know or are aware of the response that a company would give or should give an employee? Can they just give a blanket statement of, oh, you didn't pass the background check? Is that okay?
Well, you really need to be careful, because right now, for employers who make hiring decisions based on social media, that kind of check isn't illegal. And making the hiring decisions on that information right now isn't illegal. But again, this is an emerging kind of practice. This isn't something that is, you know, as widely practiced as drug testing and, you know, criminal background checks. I think that we're going to see, as it becomes more and more prevalent in the marketplace, and there may be disputes around that. So again, you need to be employers need to be careful. Just because it isn't illegal doesn't mean that you can base all your decisions off this, because as things become more practiced by the public at large, that's when disputes come up. And through disputes, new laws are created. So it is a place where you really need to be careful. And again, like I said, you can't be making decisions just because you find something that is inappropriate, whether it be, you know, language or photos. You need to be very cognizant of the fact that you're not making any decisions based on age, race, sexual orientation, or religion. You know, and these things, although consciously, as a hiring manager, you might not think that, that doesn't mean the candidate can't bring a dispute against you indicating otherwise. So it's very gray area, and people really need to be careful.
Interesting. So in regards to credentials, I'm curious personally, do a lot of people lie about credentials? I mean, do you actually find that more people than not, their credentials have suspended accidentally, which is why it's not coming up or being cleared? Or are a lot of people lying about credentials? And I'm asking because I don't know if you've ever seen it, but it's this show called Suits on USA, which is amazing. And it's about a guy, Mike Ross, who said he was a lawyer. And he actually is practicing law without a law degree. And they're always trying to figure out ways of how to keep his secret hidden. And so I think it's pretty interesting. But in the real world, I'm curious, do a lot of your customers find people that are saying they have credentials and they really don't?
I would say that by and large, people are honest. And I think we don't see many people that are outright dishonest about, you know, what kind of credentials or licenses they may hold. I think what we find more often are that there might be hits against that license or hits against that credential, which might mean it's expired, it needs to be updated, their criminal background check is outdated, or for whatever reason, you know, they might have had an instance of abuse reported, and they're barred from participating in, you know, different networks like Medicare and Medicaid, and that would bar them from employment. Now, that doesn't say they don't have that license, but you know, you really need to make sure you're going beyond making sure, okay, you have your degree. I have a copy of it. You have your license. I've checked with the educational body, and they said that you graduated in good standing. But then I see 3 years into your practicing that you were on probation from your license. What happened? What was that? So I think what we find more often is that there's some activity following the actual achievement of that license that is relevant to the hiring process.
Got it. And so back to my Suits reference again. In the show, they actually found out that he was a fraud, and the company took a lot of heat for it. So in real life, say that same situation would have happened, but the law firm didn't do any credentialing to make sure that this so-called lawyer actually had a law degree. Is the company legally responsible for having someone who doesn't have a degree practicing, you know, medicine, law, accounting, whatever they say that they're doing that they clearly don't have a degree for or a license for.
Just to clarify the question, so if you are hiring a candidate and you don't do a background screening or a credentialing service on that candidate when you hire them for a professional role, and then, so if I'm a hospital and I hire a doctor, and that doctor actually doesn't have a license to practice,
correct,
and that doctor ends up, you know, hurting a patient, that hospital system and their malpractice insurance is going to be responsible for making that situation right. Because, you know, with law or with medicine, the implications of a professional making a mistake can vary widely, right? It could be, you know, I'm not going to be able to walk right for the rest of my life, or, you know, my company that was worth $1 million that you were representing, you lost a lawsuit. Now I have to close down my company. My entire livelihood is gone. That person is going to look for retribution, not from the individual, but they're going to look to that company to make it right, whether that be monetarily or otherwise. So you really need to think about, as a hiring manager, you're responsible for what happens. If you hire someone and they hurt someone because you didn't do your job, they're coming after, you know, you to make things right. And that's going to hurt, you know, your company financially, but also you need to think about your reputation as well as a company. Are you going to be now known? That may have been the only person in 1,000 hires that you didn't do a background check on. And maybe you didn't do it just because, you know, they came from people you knew, they were referred in, or whatever the case might be. Maybe your system was down that day, but that's really going to hurt your reputation as a company too. People are going to look at you as every doctor they hire, who knows if they're credentialed or not. So there's a lot of factors you need to consider when thinking about that.
So in the same vein, let's talk about fake names and aliases. And I could see that this could be a potential problem because in one bucket, you have, I'm assuming you have individuals using fake names and aliases. On the other hand, earlier you mentioned that there are cases where your name could be Joe Smith and there's a huge mix-up because your name or address or something is so similar to so many other people that they're pulling the wrong background screen. But then I'm assuming that there are also mix-ups. I know 2 years ago when I got married, we were talking to a bunch of other couples and my wife was talking to women who were trying to figure out what they were doing with their name because they had to change their last name or they're going to hyphen. But then they heard that a lot of people who have hyphenated names have trouble with credentials and background. So how does that work? Oh, and then I almost forgot. Then you have so much cybercrime and then identity theft going on. So I'm assuming that names and aliases and really trying to prove who you are and you that you really are you can sometimes become an issue. So how do you deal with all of that?
Yeah, and I mean, that's something that we come across a lot. And not every company wants to check all the aliases for a couple of reasons. Some hiring managers don't think that it's even required or necessary. They're like, oh, you know, we're going to check their name. If anything comes back, we'll look at it. But as you said, you know, there's so many instances when people change their names. And while people get married and change their name, there might also be reasons that people change their name to hide something. So it's very important to look at aliases, and you'd be surprised how often that goes unchecked. Another reason it would go unchecked is because it costs more money from a hiring and credentialing perspective, usually, to check aliases. Now with Accutrace, you know, we check all aliases for free, but I've come across new clients that said, you know, we haven't been really doing that because we don't want to spend the money for every single alias. That's just almost like another candidate we need to do. So while people don't always do it, you need to be cognizant that, you know, people get married, they change their name, or they might be trying to hide something. And this is why we conduct actually what's called an address and social security trace before ever doing a criminal background or a criminal background check, because that address and social security trace will actually return all known aliases for a candidate based upon that social security number. So that means that before we ever do a criminal background check, we're going to have, you know, if there's three or four or five names, you know, people get married more than once. And so we're going to actually be able to run that criminal background check with any of those names and all of those names, and make sure that nothing's falling through the cracks. And that might actually look like a county search. So that one type of criminal background check is what's called a county search. And so every address that comes back from that address and social security trace, we're going to have every location that candidate's ever lived. And so we'll look back 7 years at every single one of those counties where that candidate has ever lived. And that'll include all of their aliases as well. But that's not always going to be enough to check everything, because what if that person was on vacation and got in trouble? Or if that person was on holiday, you know, you're visiting family, you get, you know, a DUI or something. That's not always going to be found in that jurisdiction, that county where you actually lived. And so on top of that, you know, we have the address and social security trace. We have the 7-year county criminal. We're also going to do a nationwide criminal background check on the nationwide database. And so what that's going to do is, on top of every county we checked, we're going to be able to see if you ever committed a crime while you were outside of that address, or those addresses where you've lived in the past. And so, you know, we build these different packages to include the different services, like the address and social security trace, the county search, the nationwide. And from all of these different data sets, we actually are able to aggregate and have a full, better understanding of, you know, a person's history.
So now I want to talk a little bit about the different types of screenings and tests that a company should actually consider. So I know earlier you were saying that if you're a doctor or you are driving a forklift or maybe in a factory working with different types of machinery, that there may be different types of tests. But can we go into some of the examples about the different types of drug tests that different companies would get, or are they all the same?
Yeah, so I mean, just like criminal background checks, as I was kind of just talking about, there's a variety of criminal background checks, and you kind of need to combine these things based upon what you're looking for, right? And so it's really the same way with a drug test, because a drug test is made up of various panels, and you need to combine these different panels, whether it be a 5-panel or a 10-panel, and I'll talk about that in a second, but you need to think about the kind of candidate you're hiring for, and the different things you might need to check for. So just like as an example, there's a variety of types of drug tests. There's lab-based, where a candidate needs to go into a lab and give a specimen. And then there's also instant results. So if you actually want to test someone on site for, you know, a positive drug test, you can actually do that without them even leaving your site. And then you can either test on, you know, urine, saliva, and hair, depending upon, you know, what kind of drug test you're looking to have someone be tested on. And you also have to think about, you know, what you want to detect. So let's say we're hiring someone for light industrial, right? We would likely want to check for things that, you know, people use for recreational drug use, like amphetamines. We might want to check for cocaine or cannabinoid, you know, like marijuana. You would want to test for those things that, you know, people can readily find in their neighborhood, maybe if they're looking for it. But for example, we also work with a large number of medical partners. And when you're screening folks who are going to be working in a medical setting, they might have access to prescription drugs. You would want to make sure that you're using a specialized medical professional panel for a broad range of medications, which are, you know, more frequently used by educated abusers who might be tempted to avoid common detection techniques with uncommon drugs, right? And so in this test, you might still want to test for amphetamines, cocaine, and cannabinoid, but you're also going to want to test for barbiturates like muscle relaxers. You're going to want to test for Xanax. You're going to want to test for methadone or Quaaludes, right? Opiates is a huge epidemic in the nation. I mean, we hear about that all the time. And with medical professionals, you know, whether they have an issue with that themselves, or if perhaps they're stealing those opiates for sale on the street, you know, you're going to be wanting to test these things, PCP, pain relievers, inhalants, you know. So while with a light industrial drug test, you might be good with a 5-panel drug screening, when you're going into a medical professional drugs test, you're going to want to expand that out to a 10 or 12 panel and test for some of these other things that, you know, only those folks would have access to.
When it comes to the drug screening, and like you said, a lot of the different drugs that maybe a doctor would have access to that others wouldn't, are companies typically looking at this as a catch-all? So if you're using any of them, then you're typically away, or is there typically a sliding scale? And I guess it depends on what's illegal versus legal or prescription use. But do you see companies putting them on a sliding scale, or it's typically if you use any of them, you're fired?
Well, that's a really great question. And what we actually have is a safeguard or an intermediary step before any result comes back as a positive and that's sent to the employer. We have a in-house medical officer who would review any positive result. Now, if it's negative, you know, there is no trace of any of these drugs. There is absolutely nothing to worry about, right? But if it's positive, we want to make sure that, one, the test was conducted successfully. There wasn't any, you know, issue with the processing of the test, one. And two, we want to have a moment to review that positive result with the candidate prior to sending it over to the employer. And what that looks like is the medical officer that we have will give a call to that candidate, review the results with them, discuss any prescriptions that they may have, and should, let's say, you know, it comes back positive for cannabinoid, but they have a prescription for medical marijuana, and that's, you know, a doctor issued prescription, then that wouldn't be considered a positive result in that case because that person has a prescription for it. So then that would be sent over to the employer with a note indicating, you know, it's positive for this substance. There is an associated prescription that is, you know, still within a timeline of dosage, you know, so if they had a prescription for it 2 years ago and they're still testing positive for it, that's not the same situation. But, you know, you're given all of that relevant information. So it wouldn't really actually be considered a positive result if they have an active prescription for it.
And for some of the states, I'm assuming that your company does nationwide screenings and background tests?
Yeah, that's okay. True.
So for some of the states that now have more lax laws or have legalized recreational marijuana usage, have you seen company or employers now excluding that from the panel or excluding that from something that they're testing for? Or are they still testing for it? Because even in those states, it might be legally from a city or local standpoint, but still illegal on a federal level.
Right. Well, I mean, that's definitely something that needs to be considered. And so even if it's legal from a state perspective, and you don't need a prescription for it, I think employers are likely still testing for that because they want to take that into consideration when hiring someone for a position, or even if it's going to be on the job testing. Just because even in these drug panels, you can test for alcohol, And if someone comes back with a positive alcohol test, that's going to weigh within your consideration on, you know, was that person on the job? Was it that morning? Was that done during working hours? And so just because something isn't illegal, I mean, alcohol isn't illegal, but it's still a substance that can affect someone's work productivity. So it's still something that people are including in their test for sure.
Got it. And then one of my last questions, are there any analytics or metrics that an employer or an HR person should be looking at in regards to their testing or credentialing or screening? Should they be looking at the percentage of people who didn't pass, or, you know, how long it's taking for people to get back to them with references? Any data or reporting around that?
I mean, there's a lot of statistics that people should be looking at. And you can kind of cut this out and chop it up in a few different ways. One is, you know, you want to know your turnaround time. I mean, that's a big consideration. As you said in the beginning, how long is it taking for me to get someone, you know, credentialed and ready to go? And so you want to know, on average, what that turnaround time is. Now, that might vary a little bit between state to state, because each state has different, you know, credentialing practices and different laws and different ways to obtain records, which might take a little longer than others. And so when you're looking at turnaround time, you might want to see on average company-wide what that number is. But, you know, you also want to take a look at each location. So if you have an office in New York and have an office in DC and Philadelphia, you know, what is the difference of that average turnaround time per office? You also want to take a look at the cost, you know, because beyond paying a third party like Accutrace to automate process and give you these analytics, you're also going to be paying sometimes pass-through fees to actually obtain these records from the state, because, you know, the state is expelling energy and focus in maintaining these records and providing them to you upon request. And so you want to think about, okay, what is my cost per applicant in each one of these states? Because that's going to be something that you need to consider too. Is it costing me way more money in New York to hire folks than it is for the people I'm hiring in Philadelphia? So how is that going to affect my hiring decisions? If I need to have, you know, an operations plant, maybe I'll put that in Philadelphia versus New York, depending upon how much it's going to cost me to hire these folks and then replenish the turnover there. And these are all different things you can think about. And then another piece you might want to think about is, what kind of results are returning from these candidates? Am I having a harder time finding, you know, successful candidates with clean credentials and criminal background checks in one area versus another? What can I do there in my hiring approach or advertising approach to try to tap into a different candidate in that area? What kind of recruitment marketing can I implement there? Because I'm seeing, you know, these different time, turnaround times, different spend. And if every credential is coming back with a hit, that's, you know, sometimes money spent and wasted because you're not able to bring that person on. So, you know, you want to take a look at these different, you know, key performance indicators and see how that can affect your business and how you can change your hiring practices around that.
That makes a lot of sense. Thanks for that. And last question for this section, if I am looking to implement or considering implementing some type of screening, testing, or credentialing process within my hiring process, what does my plan look like? Where do I start? What should I be considering?
Well, I think it really starts around, you know, what industry you're hiring for. Are you placing those folks in office or out of office? You know, what is my hiring volume? And with that information, you'd be able to, you know, talk to a credentialing and background screening company like Accutrace. And what we would do is create a package for you, right? And we would consider those three items, but we'd also take into consideration, you know, what kind of cost are you looking at? What kind of turnaround time are you looking for? Because, you know, there's three aspects to everything. There's quality, there's time, and there's money, right? And if you focus on two of those and maximize two, one of those three is going to fall. And so you really need to come up with a customized package that is going to give you the confidence in the hires that you want. It's going to give you the turnaround time you need from a hiring perspective, as we talked about. And you want to make sure the cost is something that you can live with. So, you know, what's the time, what's the quality, and what's the cost? And it's really finding the balance that each employer is comfortable with, and creating a customized solution for them. But I think coming to the table with at least those considerations in mind is going to, you know, make sure that you end up with something that is right for you.
Awesome. So now we're going to go into one of my favorite sections of the podcast, which is the real, the random, and the ridiculous, where I ask you a real question, a random question, and a ridiculous one. Are you ready, Rob?
Totally. Let's go.
All right. So the real question, do you like bread pudding? And if so, how do you like it made?
I absolutely love bread pudding.
I knew I liked you.
I absolutely love it. And I mean, it has to be like the super moist bread pudding. Like it's almost custard, but it's definitely bread pudding. And I love it when there's cinnamon and raisins on it.
Oh, there we go. We will be meeting for bread pudding very shortly. So the random question. I met you when I was hosting the most recent Disrupt HR event in Philly, and you actually wrapped your commercial, which was great. Your company was one of the sponsors of the event, and you wrapped the commercial. So I would love if you just gave us a taste. And I'll link to the video as well. But I would love if you gave us a taste of a little bit of the wrap, if you can remember it.
Oh, man, I got to think back. All right, so I think it started like, "Hey everybody, my name is Rob. Don't let the suit fool you. I'm really a slob. I'm here with Accutrace, and that's a fact. We do background screening in that." And that's all I can remember.
Nice. That was amazing.
Put me on the spot.
There we go.
Man.
This is what it's all about. And then the ridiculous question. If you can share, because I know you guys have a lot of legal stuff going on, confidentiality, but if you can share one of the most ridiculous stories that you've heard about either background screening, drug testing, or credentialing that a company ever had to go through, without naming the company's name, of course, if you can share it.
I would say that one thing that I think is interesting, and it's not a personal experience that we've had, but I think it's kind of interesting and crazy to look at, you know, the sharing economy by and large, right? You know, like Airbnb and Uber, and the situations that are unfolding in that sharing economy. I mean, it's a beautiful thing. You know, people are employed, people are making money, people are getting a better service, they're traveling the world, they don't have to stay in, you know, corporate hotels. But anytime an issue comes up, which statistically I've read is less than 1%, it causes huge ripples in the credentialing and background screening considerations and processes of these companies. So like Uber was fined, you know, millions of dollars in a number of states. Atlanta happened to Texas, because these different, you know, less than 1% issues come up. But it really opens up your eyes to, you know, what practices are occurring in these organizations. And this affects me. I use Airbnb, I use Uber. And then only when these little things happen, statistically, because by and large, everything is good. People are you know, trustworthy. But when these little things happen, people do research and then they find that hundreds, thousands of people weren't credentialed correctly. And you think about those implications and how crazy it is. You know, have I lived you know, have I been driven around with someone that either doesn't have a valid license or is a convict? You know, these things are really interesting to me, and it's kind of ridiculous, getting back to your question,
sure.
When companies like Uber, huge worldwide companies, aren't doing their due diligence. I mean, even though it's such a small fraction, it's, come on, your society is putting their trust in you. You really need to think about this stuff.
I agree. I catch Uber all the time, and that's a little scary.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, Rob, thank you so much for being such an awesome guest. You were able to take a topic like background screening, drug testing, and credentialing, and actually make it an interesting episode. So for that, I want to thank you. Thanks for being here.
Thanks so much, Bruce. I really, really appreciate your time.
Yeah, I appreciate your time as well. Thank you. So how can people find you and AccuTrace online?
Well, you can just Google AccuTrace, AccuTrace.com. And you can reach out to me on LinkedIn, Robert Flom, and Twitter, Rob Flom, R-O-B-F as in Frank, L-O-M. Any questions, you know, if you're looking for just, you know, more information on any of the topics we talked about, I just want to be a resource for you and your audience. So I'm happy to help.
Now that you've put out your social media names and links, you better make sure it's cleaned up, because, you know, after this episode, people are definitely going to want to say, you know what, let's see what Rob has going on.
I hope so.
Oh, but that was great. Thanks again. So, listeners, thank you so much for coming back for the podcast. We have enjoyed having you episode after episode, learning everything that all of these amazing guests have been sharing. If you like this episode along with all the others, please leave us a 5-star rating on iTunes and make sure that we're downloaded to your favorite podcast player. Also, if you're considering an HR dashboard to track all your most important HR KPIs or metrics in one place, please visit employeecycle.com. Well, HR folks, until next time, make sure you continue to hire, train, and retain the best workforce possible. Later, kids.